you can be really, really good at your craft, but if you're not good at business as well, then you kind of won't go anywhere. And I think you either need to be good at both, or if you recognize that you can't be good at the second business bit, then you need to surround yourself and build a team of people that can help you there.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Now, you get to listen to this episode's inspiring guest because they applied to come on the show. Yep, they filled out the form at ecmp.info/guest. And a few weeks later, we recorded this episode. So if you've got something you'd love to share with the audience of this show, then head to ecmp.info/guest to put your hat in the ring. And maybe we'll be chatting in a couple of weeks' time. So what are we talking about in this episode? Well, we are continuing our eco theme for B Corp month. Whilst our guest is not a B Corp, today's guest has done a huge amount to improve their eco credentials of their business and won a number of awards for it. So we will be talking about their approach to improving the sustainability of their business, why they've done it, and how it fits in with the rest of the strategy of the business. We'll also be talking about how he's built sustained growth into his business. They've been growing at 20 to 40% for the last 5 years. So how have they continued to deliver that in what's been a very changing period over the last 5 years? Loads of stuff changing. And he will be sharing how they've done that and a lot of very cool advice on keeping your strategy on track and building growth and value into your business. I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with this guest. So I hope you get as much out of the conversation as I did. Please listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on his top tips, which are frequently described as the best bit of the show. And he's also giving some super killer tips in the tool top tip bit in particular, some very cool advice, ninja stuff coming in that bit. And at the end, you'll also get my own take on this episode. So thank you and make sure you listen to the end. Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Scott Lego is the founder and managing director of Scott Lego Gallery, sellers of premium quality Australian artworks and gifts. They sell via their Shopify store and Real World Gallery. Founded 7 years ago, they now do over $1 million a year with annual growth between 20 and 40%. Plus, they've won multiple sustainability awards, including the Minister's Award for Leadership Sustainability for Scott's efforts within the business and broader business community. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Chloe. Great to be with you.
Awesome to have you here. Always lovely to have an Australian guest on the show, especially one who's done such built such a cool business as you have. So I'm really looking forward to chatting to you about it. First off, though, how did you end up in the world of e-commerce?
Yeah, great question. And I guess my answer is that I've got a very unconventional background and probably not a traditional pathway to either e-commerce or to running a creative business or being a photographer. So I guess the short version is I joined the Air Force when I left school. I'd always had an interest in aviation, but so I did 10 years in the Air Force. Got to experience travel all around the world and, you know, some operational deployments and things in there. Once I left the Air Force, then I joined the public service, which was, you know, quite a different bureaucratic kind of regime to the military. And then after that, I became a management consultant with a top-tier management consulting firm. So feel like I crammed an MBA into my first 12 months there. And while that was happening, I had the kind of business as a little bit of a side hustle on the side before then went all in to the business about 7 years ago, as you said. So yeah, like I said, a bit of an unconventional background. I'm probably not, when you say the word photographer, I think, you know, people often think of an arty creative type, you know, a guy that turns up in ripped jeans and things like that. I'm probably the complete antithesis of that in terms of the ex-military officer that's kind of straight down the line, very kind of process orientated and driven. So that's probably reflected in how we approach the business as well. So yeah, probably a little bit, you know, different to the journey that many have arrived at.
It is quite fascinating, isn't it? Because there's kind of like almost polar opposites, the idea of something very systems driven and very organized and disciplined versus the fluffier side of art and photography. But then if you go back to the Renaissance and you look at how Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo, et cetera, who knew we were going to go here? I didn't. But how they ran their businesses was very, very focused, very, very on the money. So I guess there is that part within art. Do you find it a conflict day to day, those two extremes, or does it all work very well together for you?
For me, it works reasonably well. I guess I generally probably take the view that, and I guess you could apply this across industries, not just those that are creative, but you can be really, really good at your craft. But if you're not good at business as well, then you kind of won't go anywhere. And I think, you know, I see a lot of photographers, a lot of creative types who I believe are quite skilled and good at their craft, but they really, really struggle to work it out in a business sense. They give it a crack and they, you know, you don't see them, you know, down track or around the industry for very long because they haven't been able to kind of balance that business aspect. So I always say, you know, or my advice to other people is you need to recognize that you either need to be good at both, or if you recognize that you can't be good at the second business bit, then you need to surround yourself and build a team of people that can help you there. And I think unless you realize that and recognize that, you know, you're probably not going to make it as well as you might hope or wish for. And I think a lot of creatives kind of push back on that. Oh, I just want to focus on my art. I just want to focus on that. It's kind of all well and good, and you don't have to like it, but you know that the reality is you have to understand, you know, business, marketing and all those other aspects as well. So probably because I have come from a bit of a, what I would call not a creative background as such, I probably appreciate and happy and comfortable with those aspects. So for me, it makes sense that I need to do that and need to appreciate and understand that. So I think I've probably been pretty comfortable with that. It's pretty rare that I feel there's too much conflict between the two, between being the kind of creative and pursuing what it is that I want to shoot versus balancing that with a commercial imperative about what I want to know will sell. So look, I always do ask that question when I'm taking a photograph. I'm like, will this look good on someone's wall? And that's kind of like a check for me, but I'm still not letting the creative process be interrupted in the sense of how I might compose the shot, the lighting, all those kind of things. So I probably let the business driver be, what am I actually going to shoot in terms of subject? And then the creative bit takes over in terms of how I'm going to shoot it and be creative around that. So I don't see that as too much of a conflict, or not yet, hasn't arisen so far.
Excellent. So let's talk a bit about the product, because I said artwork and gift. So tell us a bit about what product you're selling via your site.
So look, we do everything. Obviously, when we say artworks, people probably think about the larger wall art pieces. So look, we do, you know, large wall art prints for people's homes, offices, you know, commercial spaces, everything up to, you know, multiple meter wide prints for people's homes and offices. But then we go all the way down to the smaller items. So we've got a coffee table book that's you know, features images from all around Australia. We do little acrylic blocks, which sit on people's desks, a great way to kind of brighten their office or desk, great VIP gifts and things like that. And then we even do jigsaw puzzles, which came about as a result of COVID lockdowns and things like that, where we had to close a physical retail store. We figured people were locked down. What do they need to do to kind of disconnect and spend some family time together? So we got into jigsaw puzzles as well. So I guess we cross the kind of full spectrum of, you know, lower price point through to, you know, quite a high price point item as well. And so for us, that works quite well, because when I first established the business, my concern was that, you know, if I just focused on wall art, wall art is not something that you buy, you know, kind of every week or on a regular purchase. Once you've bought something for your home, it's kind of there and you're probably done at least for a couple of years. So I was very conscious of how do we think about the purpose of our business and what do we exist to do. And so the way I kind of frame it is that we're about allowing people to experience Australia. And so what I'm doing is I'm capturing photos of Australia, and we're allowing people to experience Australia through my photographs. And what we're doing is we're offering that in a range of quality premium products. So even the lower price point items are a more premium quality version of what you might otherwise expect. So doesn't matter where the price point sits, it's still premium quality, but we're offering a range of entry points for people and options. So what we might find is someone might buy a wall art piece, but then they'll come back to us for birthday presents, gifts, wedding presents at the lower price point. Or the lower price point, maybe someone comes across a brand because they want a jigsaw puzzle, and then they kind of uncover our other options from there. So I talk about the smaller options being the thin edge of the wedge. It kind of enables us to get in front of customers, allows them to make their first purchase, and then we kind of go from there. And what we've found is our repeat customer rate is really, really high, and it's something that we're probably a little bit still to this day surprised by. And I think it's a reflection of the fact that we do offer that range, but also I believe offer a great customer experience as well.
I love how you tie that all back to that kind of reason for existing as a business being to help people explore and experience Australia. It's kind of like if you were in the traditional gallery owner mindset or the traditional photographer mindset, it would be all about the wall art and it would be about the art and everything else. But then if you reframe it to being, it's about celebrating Australia and helping people bring that into their homes, then obviously jigsaw puzzles work, obviously the acrylics on the desk work. And then you get that whole piece where it all makes sense and it all comes together, which therefore increases that retention side of things. Is all the artwork yours, as in it's all photographs you've taken, or do you bring in other artists?
No, so we've made the decision to make it all mine, which is good and bad in the sense that it is highly dependent upon me. So I'm trying to fill the role of, being the boss of the business, but also be at the lowest level and getting out and taking photos and being, a landscape photographer. That means a lot of travel, a lot of time away, a lot of time. I'll go and camp out in the snow for nights on end in winter to try and get sunrises over the, highest mountains and things like that covered in snow. So, it's quite a difference in terms of mindsets, headspace, availability to the business, to the team. So it is a challenge, but we've taken the view that we're going to keep it as all my photographs rather than bringing on board, I guess, other photographers or other work. Look, that's not to say that business model won't work for someone else. We've just chosen to go down that path, and that's the kind of simple approach that we've taken. And we're building the brand around the story of me getting out, exploring the Australian outdoors and things like that. And I think for us to kind of shift from that now would be quite a change to the business and essentially a very different business model to what we have now. So we've put a bit of thought into that, early on around those different business model options, but landed on this, and probably in part because why did I get into this as a business? And so for me, I'd had a work-life balance that really didn't exist, a lot of time traveling in previous jobs, a lot of, kind of personal life sacrifices. And so I think for me, part of my reason for getting into business as well was a personal motivation around having a business that enabled the kind of lifestyle and better work-life balance that I was after as well. So that probably drove the business model a little bit as well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of additional complexity in putting that kind of original input of the product into the business being in someone else's hands and licensing agreements and briefing them and all the rest of it. Whereas if you can go and be in charge of that, the quality is going to be there at the end because you're doing it at the beginning. So totally get why if you can keep it that simple, you would. You've been on a path of sustained double-digit growth for the last few years. Is that down to the product, the vision, marketing methods? How have you maintained that? Because I think that's something a lot of businesses find. They get like those spikes and then they can't work out what to do next. So what's been your recipe, your strategic recipe for success, I suppose I should ask you, Scott, for keeping that going for multiple years?
So probably a couple of ways I could answer that question, but I'll answer it in a simple way first and what that then leads to. And so the way I describe it is that we have to wake up every day and solve two questions, and that's it. How do we get more people in the door, and how do we convert them once they're in the door? And whether that be in the door in terms of our physical store or whether it be in the door in terms of to the website. So, you know, you kind of think about that. How do we attract people in the door, whether it be passing foot traffic? How do we make ourselves a destination to tourists? How do we bring in international tourists? How do we get people that are in our local area to know about us and come to us as their first choice for premium quality wall art? How do we then do the same thing in terms of the website? How do we get them to the website, whether that be organic traffic, whether it be direct traffic? How do we build the brand? And then once they're obviously in store or online, how do we convert them? And so they're just the two really simple questions that I talk about that we just have to wake up every day and keep solving every day, every day, every day. And then I guess we underpin that by saying, we have to be 1% better every day. So I'm very big from my Air Force background on the whole continuous improvement. So I'm very big on the just 1% better every day, every day, every day. So, and what that leads to is from a strategy point of view, you know, we're very focused on, you know, just three things really is around product excellence, make sure that we have the best quality product that we can, you know, we deliver. The second one is then around customer experience, that we deliver people the best customer experience that we can, whether they're shopping in store or online, and putting the customer at the heart of all our thinking and decision making. And then the third one, which is probably very driven from my military and management consulting background, is then around operations excellence. Like, are we running the business as efficiently? Are we, you know, simplifying, eliminating complexity? And that drives to kind of some issues around sustainability too. But, you know, are we running things where as a small team, we can produce the maximum amount of productivity and output for what would otherwise be a small team and achieve an output that is far beyond the size of our small business as it is. So that's probably the way we think about it, but it's all driven by those kind of two questions that I say we just got to wake up and solve every day.
I love the clarity of your thoughts there. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And what it spikes to my mind would be something I find many business owners struggling with, including myself these days, as so much ends up on our plate, is if we're going to be efficient with a small team and do all those things you just outlined, we have to kind of stop doing things and say no to things. Do you find that's a big part of staying on track, is not working out what to do, but it's also working out what not to do?
Absolutely. And I think when you first start, and I probably suffered this a little bit early on, where, you know, there is that tendency to, you know, to kind of say yes to things that may be a little bit off strategy or a little bit off. So a good example for us is I'm very, very clear that we are a products-based business, not a service-based business. So people think, oh, he's a photographer. Maybe I can commission him for a commercial job. Maybe we can license his images for, you know, a brochure or a tourism campaign or what have you. So the tendency early on when you're kind of struggling for income or looking for different revenue streams is to say yes to some of those opportunities. Whereas I'm very, very clear that we say no to those. And I think the reason for that being, and the way I describe it, is every time that you say yes to those other things, you're now taking time, attention, and effort away from what is your kind of your core business. And the risk as well is that you start to develop a brand where people think that that's what you do as well. And then you'll have more people come to you for that. So I think you need to be really, really clear about what your brand is and isn't. And, you know, I think there's that famous quote from Steve Jobs. It's something along the lines of, you know, it's the reason that Apple did so well was saying no, you know, to 1,000 opportunities and then only saying yes to the first one after that kind of thing. And I think it's really, really hard to do that, especially early on when people are looking for revenue. But I think you need that discipline and that focus to stay on track, to be really true to who you want to be as a brand, who you want to be recognized as a business, and what is your core, I talk about kind of core capabilities, like what is it that we're really good at and we want to be known as? I'm not trying to position us as a service-based business. I want everyone to come to us for products, physical products. And so we say no a lot. And sometimes that makes some people that maybe already existing customers, you know, maybe not that happy. But equally, I think when we sit down and explain it to them, they understand where we are. And as a result, I think, you know, people are a lot clearer about what we are and what we're not. And look, I'm not saying that's easy. And, you know, sometimes staff even are like on the team are like, oh, maybe we should think about this or maybe we should do that. And I'm probably, you know, a little bit ruthless on saying no to that. But I think it has set us up in the long term, you know, to be well positioned in terms of being really clear about what our brand is and isn't.
I love your advice there. I think that's going to help a lot of our listeners. So thank you for that, Scott. You also mentioned that efficiency piece comes into the sustainability angle. And it's interesting because coming onto your website, one wouldn't immediately know you've done anything in sustainability at all. But you've, behind the scenes, you've been doing a lot of things Has that been through, you know, protection of the environment and climate change? Has that been through, you know, a drive for further for efficiency? Because it often sustainability and efficiency do go hand in hand. I guess what I'm trying to ask, Scott, is why did you decide to take steps to become a more sustainable business?
At the end of the day, my view is probably informed just by my own experience, in the sense that, you know, I'm a landscape photographer. I travel around Australia. I spend a lot of time outdoors. You know, I think I did a TED talk, you know, probably 15 years ago about how people are, you know, increasingly disconnected from the natural world. And I'm lucky in the sense that I get to go outdoors and see, I guess, firsthand the impact, you know, in a lot of what traditionally have been considered wilderness areas. And you can't escape the impact that man has on even, you know, what are in Australia, some very, very remote areas that take a long time to get to. And you think there's no one else around, and you'd be surprised about the impact that mankind has had. So I think I'm probably driven by that as a result of what I do, and probably twofold. In I feel an imperative to A, not make the situation any worse in terms of man's negative impact on the environment, but also where I can, without being kind of too pushy. I'm not a business where we're trying to push political agendas down people's throats, but where we can as a business raise people's awareness of some of these issues, and not necessarily dictate an answer one way or the other, but at least make them more aware of these issues. So that's probably the driver. And what that then means is you sit back and go, hey, what are we doing as a business that is potentially contributing to, you know, whether it be climate change, whether it be non-sustainable practices, or could we be more efficient and have less impact on the environment? So, you know, a big one for us is, you know, we ship all over the world. So most of our customers are in Australia. We ship our artworks all over Australia. We do 10 to 15% of our revenue is export now. So you add all that up, and we have a lot of what I would call transit miles, you know, in our supply chain. And so we sat down, you know, and looked at, okay, how can we kind of cut out, as a starting point, you know, a lot of those transit miles. So we have all our prints and frames, you know, done here in Australia. We were, to begin with, we were essentially shipping them here to our location, and then, you know, fulfilling them from here. Now we essentially fulfill them directly from the supplier. So that cuts out a lot of, you know, traffic miles in that sense. But then equally, there's some things that we do consolidate here. So jigsaw puzzles is a good example, where we get them made there. We do distribute them from here, rather than kind of this onesie twosie kind of all over the place, because they're kind of quite small and things like that. And we actually kind of tracked that, looked at how Australia Post do things, and worked out that we could actually save a whole lot of transit miles from that. The other thing that we realized was that we have a lot of stuff sent to us, you know, that we do fulfill from our facility here, that is obviously wrapped in cardboard, is wrapped in plastic and things like that. And initially we were recycling and giving that away to recycling or plastic kind of disposal. And we're like, well, how can we reuse that either internally, or how can that be reused in the community and things like that? So we've basically now got to the point where we really don't buy any packaging in addition to essentially what is delivered to us. So we reuse as much as we can. And then stuff that we're not reusing ourselves, we're giving to other people so that they're reusing it, rather than it just going straight to recycling. It's at least getting one, two, maybe three other uses before it then goes on to recycling. And so we see that we're cutting out a bunch of the original consumption going on there. So that also is just probably part of that. How do we be 1% better every day? Looking at every single aspect of our supply chain, how do we improve efficiency? A big decision we've made is to have everything Australian made, in terms of all our artworks are Australian made. The tendency these days, I don't know what it's like in Europe so much, but certainly in Australia, you know, so much is made in China now. And, you know, it's often seen as a lot cheaper, but, you know, you think about all those ships going backwards and forwards, you know, does that really kind of make sense versus if we can get it made here in Australia? So we believe that we can get better quality and better sustainability outcomes by having stuff manufactured in Australia. So that's another kind of consideration around that, that on first blush may not make business sense, because it means that we're not getting items that are as cheap as they would be if we'd imported them from China, but we're making a business decision from a branding point of view too. Because, I mean, I guess at our heart, we're a very Australian business. We're showcasing Australia. We're all, like I said earlier, about people experiencing Australia. For me, it makes sense then that we have our goods made here in Australia as well, to be a truly Australian business from capture, product production, and as a business. So that's probably another driver around that as well. But it just also has great sustainability outcomes. And so it's an easy decision then as a result.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Scott, are you ready for the top tips?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, let's do this. The book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So this is one I read just recently, and previous guests may have spoken about this, but it's Atomic Habits by James Clear. The thing I'm very big about, very simple rules that are kind of easy to follow. And so that book really is around how do you kind of, form good habits or start to kind of break bad ones. And, for me, a lot of it was quite made sense. I kind of conceptually got it, but just a couple of the really basic rules. And, a good one that I've been following is the whole make it obvious, So if you want to do something of a morning, then, make sure you leave it on your desk the night before or set it up in your bedroom if you want to go for a run the next morning. And it kind of makes you do that. So for me, from a business point of view, it's really got me back to a lot more lists, sticking a few things up either on the whiteboard or the wall behind my kind of computer. And as a result of some of those things that he talks about and how you kind of form better habits, it's really helped me probably get through the to-do list this year. It's really been something I've done as part of a 2025 kind of new year resolution, if you want to call it that, to just get through and churn through that kind of to-do list a lot more efficiently. So I found that to be a great book. So I highly recommend that one.
I think that one's sitting on my shelf and has still not been read. So maybe it's time
get
to
get on it. I recommend. Yeah.
Time to take it off the shelf, Chloe. Okay. The traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So again, probably a bit of an unconventional approach to what many might say here. So look, we probably don't leverage social media, digital marketing as much of a lot in the e-commerce space. We're probably a lot more traditional. So I think you can't underestimate the power of media or PR. We've certainly had some amazing successes from getting national news coverage or things like that for our business that is just literally like as soon as that news item finishes, we're getting sales coming through and in the hundreds type thing in within minutes. So I think don't underestimate the power of media and PR to help feed that. But equally, don't discount, what I would say are traditional media channels either. I think there's a lot of focus on, what people can do on social media. But, we do TV ads, we do radio ads, we do even print ads and things like that. And we find that they're quite good. Part of the reason for that, though, I think, is you have to truly understand who your audience is. So given what the product is and our price point for a lot of ours, we generally, our audience is a little bit, in terms of customer base, is probably slightly older rather than, say, people in their 20s. And so, I think you've got to sit down and really look at where is your audience, where are they spending their time, what is their attention, and is it really on Instagram or is it, on LinkedIn or is it on a more traditional media sense? So my advice there is don't discount traditional media. I think digital is getting very, very crowded, very, very competitive. And there's definitely lots of opportunities in the traditional media space would be my advice there.
Excellent. The tool top tip then, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
So this is a couple. And one answer, I don't know if you're going to like or not, but is ChatGPT. We've really got onto that probably in the last 6 months. And as a small team, where we do a lot of things in-house. We don't outsource a lot of things. We've been able to solve a lot of problems, you know, whether it be coding, website related issues or other things very, very quickly versus the need to, you know, pay a fortune in some cases, you know, for a developer or to go and get outside help. And so, yeah, one of, I got a guy on the team who's quite young, so he's really into that. And I think that's saving us a massive amount of time. And so from a productivity point of view, that's really, really good. The other one for us is, so we use, we're on the Apple ecosystem as a business. We just use Notes, Apple Notes, which works for me because, you know, I travel a lot. I'm away a lot. I can just leave, instead of having a handwritten, you know, old whiteboard as a notice board or a billboard, we've just got a range of different notes. So when the staff come in to start a shift in the gallery, for instance, there's a little notice board or things like that. And we kind of share a lot of stuff around that way because maybe the team don't get to interact with one another in terms of retail staff. You know, someone does a shift today, the next person comes in. We're making sure that we're leaving handover notes and things like that. That works well. And again, you know, Dropbox and all those other tools like that, that allow you to kind of work remotely, share big files and all those kind of things. So without some of those, you know, we'd be in trouble. But the other thing I would say is we have really probably in the last 12 months sat down and looked at all the apps, all the tools that we use, how much we were kind of paying for all those, and really scaled back a lot of what we were doing to really kind of bring back that stack of apps that we've been using, whether they be Shopify apps or others, and just being really, really kind of ruthless on, is that actually delivering us enough value, and just really try and simplify that, because that becomes an overhead for a small business when you're starting to try and run too many. So we've probably really simplified that a lot in the last 6 months, definitely.
Yeah, something a lot of brands are doing at the moment is going through that whole list of tech subscriptions and going, actually, what? On the ChatGPT thing, I want to quickly drill a little bit deeper into that because I know a lot of people are going, oh, how do we use it? What do we use it for? And you said about you're using it for the coding. Is that literally going, can you give me the code to do this? Because I know I use it a lot for, I've got to do, how do I do this clever thing in Excel? And it just gives you the answer back. Is that the sort of thing you're finding it really useful for?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's little things where we might want to tweak some things on the website. You know, they're kind of not a standard thing that comes with the template. You know, you kind of Google it. You can't really kind of find the answer. You ask ChatGPT. And I guess if you've got enough knowledge, you can be like, that sounds right. Let's test that. Oh, it works. Doesn't seem to have broken anything else. Let's kind of run with that. So yeah, we're doing that quite a bit. We've also used ChatGPT a lot to, you know, from product descriptions, intros and things like that. We've saved probably months worth of, you know, human effort around that as well. So that was something that we did as a deliberate activity last year. I looked at how many products we had, how many, you know, little product description intros, because we already had some, but how many intros we'd write. That's probably 70 or 80,000 words across a product list. You know, how long would it take a staff member to write that many words? Get ChatGPT to do it. It's 80% right. Now the staff come in and we kind of, you know, humanize that a little bit more. So just the efficiency and time savings from that. But so we're using it across the board in a range of different roles. And we're probably not even touching the surface.
Oh yeah, I don't think any of us are. But love those pieces of advice. Thank you. Right, back onto the tool tips now. The last one, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
Yeah, it probably goes back to my point earlier, which is to take a really good hard look at your whole, logistics supply chain. You know, there's a quote that kind of goes around, amateurs talk tactics, professionals talk logistics. And I think, you know, the more that you can look at your entire supply chain, the whole logistics arrangement of your business and you know, e-commerce businesses, where are you fulfilling it from? How is that arrangement working? You know, where is it going? What are all those transit miles and so forth? And it doesn't take that much work to kind of sit down and look at that, but just literally kind of map it out and you'll be surprised at how you can find that there's efficiency savings around that, how you can lean that out, you know, any opportunities for savings and from a time point of view. And then obviously, you know, the consumption of, you know, fuels that are used in the process. But, you know, time is, you know, impacts sustainability in terms of the amount of energy that you're using, you know, time and resources that could be applied to something else and so forth. So yeah, definitely take a really good hard look at your logistics chain.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Scott. Now, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social media?
Yeah, for sure. So look, for most people, it's online. So it's literally just scottlego.com. So scottlego.com. So we're obviously an Australian-based business, but we ship overseas as well. So we do everyone internationally. They can find us on Instagram, literally just at Scott Lego, which is essentially around my photography. And then the gallery is at Scott Lego Gallery. And then on Facebook, it's just Scott Lego Official. So they're the main places you can find us. And obviously for those that are in Australia or visiting Canberra, they can find us in Kingston in Jardine Street.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Scott. It gave us given us all a lot to think about in how we can improve our businesses. So thank you so much for being here.
That's all right, Chloe. A pleasure and very enjoyable. Thank you.
Dare I say a masterclass in setting your strategy up for success there. I thoroughly enjoyed that chat with Scott and I think the insights he shared on just how important it is. If you want sustained growth, you need to be really clear on what your business is and what it isn't. You need to be really clear on what your role is every day. You know, here's two questions. Our role is one, to get more people in the door, and two, how do we convert more of them, whether that's for the gallery or the online store, to really define what you exist for. In his case, we help people experience Australia, not we help them put art on their walls. And you know, and the kind of the core focus is on product excellence and customer experience and ops excellence. You kind of, you listen to that and you're like, well, obviously they're growing well because they know what they're doing. They're focused on the right things and they are building their business, you know, to fit with all of those things. And I thought it's really fascinating as well how for them, the sustainability piece comes in because it fits with Scott's personal values. It fits with the business's reason for existing. It fits with their drive for efficiency. It fits with their brand. It becomes a complete no-brainer to be doing that because it fits with every element of the strategy that he's building into the business. So really, really, I thoroughly enjoyed that one. I think I'm sure many of you will listen to that one twice to make sure you got everything. Definitely a good recipe for growth there. So huge thanks to Scott for joining us. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those top tips and links to the things we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of those other things we share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, maybe you are selling art and you want to do it better, then why not have a listen to episode 519, which is a recent one with another but very different art-focused online store for a bit more inspiration. And if you are interested in hearing more from businesses on Shopify, then head to ecmp.info/Shopify for all our Shopify episodes. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every single week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Have a brilliant week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
It's time to download our 500 top tips to make your e-commerce business more profitable ebook. Go to ecmp.info/ebook now.